All right, everybody, it seems that we are live, streaming somewhere across the internet. So first off, I just realized that I'm apparently right before the party. So in an hour and 15 minutes, all of you are probably going to want to be putting on your capes and going to the party. So I really appreciate you sticking around this long, because this day seems terribly, terribly long with all the sessions. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to be talking about responsive web design, which I'm kind of looking at the little mini guide and realizing that it's a little bit of an odd bird, because responsive web design, it isn't a Microsoft product. It also is not something that helps you scale your line of business solutions on Azure much easier or anything like that. Really what it's about is creating websites and web apps that are responsive to the user's device. And we'll talk about a lot of that quite a bit. So if you think about how we view the browser or how we view the web today, is that we tend to think about the desktop browser. So when someone says web, they think of that. My parents, for example, when they talk about the web, they talk about, clicked on the E, because that's what the web means to them. But I think we all sort of know that that's changing quite a bit, that the web today is kind of exposed in a variety of ways. One, through desktop browsers, of course, but mobile browsers, tablet form factors, televisions, game consoles, and you can imagine in the future what there, may be. Now, the thing I always like to do when I'm trying to talk about something is to kind of show off, like, here's the wrong way to do it. So the good example is actually my blog, unfortunately. So my blog, I've got two things to say, actually, one good, one bad. So the first part that's good is that this material and all of the links that I have in here are actually already on my blog. So you don't have to write feverishly, all the different links and things that I'll show you. The presentation is up there as well. And if there's anything else that I think of in the next 48 hours, I'll go ahead and stick it up there as well. But if you notice, this is sort of your typical blog site, right? You have some content. So if I, scroll down, I have different blog posts. Of course, you have to have a picture of a cat, because it is the internet. Now, the thing is, though, if you see, on my laptop I have a fairly nice resolution, and if I was on my computer at work, my resolution could scale up to 1900 by 1200, I believe. And so, if you think about a lot of times, if you have something of that size, you find yourself, losing a lot of things that you can do with that space. Now, what I'm not saying is that you just go ahead and put everything, in on a page that you possibly can. But here, for example, if I bring up the F12 tools in Internet Explorer, and I just go ahead and bring up a ruler, I can see that the content, if I drag it across, is about 521 pixels across. Now, if I go and I look at actually my viewport itself, and I scroll over, I see that I have approximately 1,244 pixels. So you can see that the content that I have isn't even taking up the space that it could have available to it. And so what we see this happen a lot of times is that, number one, you're not taking advantage of the resources that a user has with the device. And it doesn't respond very well to different changes. So, for example, there are people, out there who, they're rocking 800 by 600. And if you start to kind of drag over to kind of replicate that, you'll notice that we get those horrible, horrible horizontal scroll bars, right? And then you're actually running over the content that you have. So this is something that, isn't very good. It's not a good experience. So what's kind of interesting is that there was a gentleman named Ethan Marcotte, and back in May, he wrote this article called Responsive Web Design. And it really just kind of took off. You know, it's one of those weird things that just all the web designers out there just started getting really excited about it. And I have to admit, I wasn't too terribly excited. I saw the article and I, you know, put it somewhere where, of course, I was going to read. You know, and that list has about 1,000 articles that I haven't read yet. But then what happened was I also heard about this thing called media queries. And that was very, very cool. And then I started seeing them connecting media queries to responsive web design. So I said, well, maybe I should look into responsive web design a bit more. So he started off by doing this article, which got kind of a lot of publicity. And so people started building their websites, you know, trying to be very responsive. And what's kind of what I find kind of compelling about responsive web design is that it starts thinking of the user's needs instead of ours. Because a lot of times what we do is we do things that are easy, right? So back in the, you know, the kind of fighting of, you know, should you do table-based layout or CSS layout, we fought for a long time, right? Because, oh, it was so much easier to do table, right? And no one was really looking at your source, so you could kind of get away with it. And then we sort of moved from that, and we said, okay, now let's think about, you know, what we should be doing. Well, a lot of people, to make it simpler, is they said, well, what I'll do is I'll create a div, I'll make it 960 pixels wide, and I'll just lock in that look. And that's what you see a lot today. And so every time, you know, I joke around and I say, anytime you hear someone say 960 pixels, there should be something that kind of raises up in, you know, on the back of your neck that says, maybe this isn't the right thing. The other thing that we need to, that responsive web design actually addresses, is that we need to adapt to various device capabilities instead of configurations. So about, oh my gosh, I'm probably dating myself here. But years ago, I was an ASP.NET evangelist for Microsoft. And we actually built this thing called the ASP.NET Mobile Toolkit. Does anybody remember that? Well, some of you, you know, yes. So some of you might be going, I never heard of it. Well, here's the reason why. Because back in the day, what we used to try to do is we tried to go out and get a laundry list. You know, we put it in Excel so that we could pivot table it and everything. We would get this long list of all these different devices. And then what we would do is we would hard code, right? We would write all the code for you. So if you had, you know, some feature phone of this ilk, of this variety, of this source, what we would do is we go, oh, we know what that capability of that device is. And then we would just go ahead and write that code for you. But can you imagine what the problem was? That list just kept growing and growing and growing and growing. And then what would happen is customers would say, when are you all going to add my device? When are you going to add this device? Oh, did you know that in the UK there's this people that did this cool thing that it takes this kind of feature set to make it work? Well, we were kind of slow to do it. So kind of the mobile stuff sort of disappeared. And what's nice about responsive web design is we're actually going to see how we sort of begin to change that. And then finally, one of the things that responsive web design is going to help us do is to future-proof our websites so that as we're building things, we're not thinking about them as, oh, this is for a desktop browser or this is for a mobile device. What we're going to do is we're going to say we're going to build an experience based on the capabilities of the device that is trying to bring up my website. So let me show you some demos of websites that do this fairly well. That was my cat, Neptune, by the way, back in the States. I miss him. So what happened was after responsive web design came about, Simon Colley, a really well-known designer, decided, hey, I'm going to try this out on my own website. And so the thing he did was he made sure that everything would float properly and that as we resized the browser window that it would adapt to it. So, for example, if you notice here, it's kind of simple. There's kind of four different parts at the top, some external references here. And then when you actually pull in the window, you'll notice that he starts making changes so that no matter what the website, what the width of the website is, it looks and feels like it should. So you could imagine here if we had a, you know, mobile device, this is what the website would look like. And you'll notice that we really didn't change much. We just changed sort of how things lay out, how it flowed, and I'll show you some other kind of examples of what makes it really good. Now, probably my favorite responsive website is a thing called the Sasquatch Festival. And it's just your typical music festival. So here you can, you know, and again, I apologize, I'm so used to pointing this direction or that direction and not so far high up. But if you look here, you can see that, you know, in our website, we have a very large header graphic of Sasquatch. We've got all kinds of different details, like carbon credits provided by Honda, sponsored by Kokanee. If you scroll down, there's various things you can do. So you can view the venue map, buy some tickets, follow them on Twitter, watch the trailer. Then we can look at different artists. And then there's actually a blog, and there's some more ads over here. And then, of course, down here at the bottom, they have a playlist that plays while you're on the site. I don't have music turned on, so you can't hear it. But one of the things that's kind of neat is they made it responsive, so that as your viewport gets smaller, it starts, they're not doing a very good job on the videos, but on the top here, you can notice that they kind of squeeze things down a bit, and as it gets smaller, you'll notice that they then decide, oh, okay, the context of the person probably has changed who's coming to this website. Now the assumption is that they're probably on a mobile device or on a much smaller device. So what they do is they get rid of some of the extraneous ads. They actually tighten up the navigation that they have. So instead of the eight things of navigation that they have, they focus on kind of the big four there. And again, you can see here that it all looks very good. One of the things that they do as well is they change their text. So their text, they actually put more line spacing in there so that on the mobile device it actually looks and feels better. It doesn't look like it's just a big site shrunk down to a little site. So I'm a big fan of Sasquatch Festival. And then what's nice is that people have actually started building HTML5 templates that are responsive. So this is a website that I run where I just basically curate all the cool HTML5 stuff that I find. But what was nice was instead of me having to build a template to do all of that, I went out and actually bought this template from Theme Foundry. And you can see here that, you know, it's kind of a horizontal, you know, scroller type of thing. But, you know, if you, again, pull this in, you'll notice that it changes its view. So it moves the navigation from horizontal to vertical, and then all the individual items now are vertical as well. And so it makes it looks actually pretty good on a mobile device. And what's kind of fun about this is that you're going to start, as you start getting into this, you're going to just grab your window, and you're always going to be doing this all the time because you're going to be like, oh, is it responsive? And then you'll get to the point where when it's not responsive, you'll just be like, oh, that's a fail. What's wrong with them? So this is kind of an addictive thing that will pretty much happen to you. So those are just some kind of simple examples. Now, Ethan Marcotte actually wrote not only this article, but he's also written a book, and I'll tell you about the book here in a little bit or in a while. But what he did was he basically said there are three elements to responsive web design. He said a flexible grid-based layout, flexible images and media queries. And then there's sort of this fourth thing that's been sort of rearing its head, and I'll talk about that. I'll keep you all in suspense about it. So what we'll do is we'll talk about flexible grid-based layout. Now, I'm going to just warn you, the first two parts are kind of boring, and they're not very fun. In fact, we're going to have to do some math. But then we're going to get to the really cool fun stuff. So if you just bear with me through that part, we'll get to the really fun stuff. So first off, we have to ask ourselves, well, what's the problem? You know, why isn't what we have today and how we do things today working? Well, first off, you know, we all now can consider that non-responsive sites are no fun, and that fixed-width sites are not the best experiences. But here's the challenge, that a lot of the design tools that are out there, their output is in pixels. And so a lot of times what happens is that, you know, if you're a developer, you know, your designer is giving you a comp, and the comp is, you know, very well laid out, has all the structure and all the things that you need. But you find that, like, everything is given to you in a pixel. And we know that, you know, pixels are kind of a fixed type of thing. Also, there's this weird thing where sometimes a pixel isn't a pixel necessarily. So a pixel over here that you go, oh, it's a dot here, well, it can be kind of eight dots over here when you're using a different device, especially when you start talking about resolutions and things like that. So a pixel is not always a pixel. So one of the things that we probably want to do if we have a website that is very pixel-based is we want to actually turn it into those pixels into the, its counterpart of the M. And what the M does is the M says, okay, instead of this sort of fixed width, I'm going to create this relative width. Now, how do you turn a pixel into an M? Well, this is the formula. We'll spend the next hour going through this formula piece by piece. Just kidding. This is the formula. Much easier, right? It's basically this. Target divided by context equals result. And what the heck does that mean? So what you can do is you can take the target. So, for example, let's say that I have a 24-pixel heading, you know, a header 1. That's the target that I have. Now, the context is what I want it to end up being for an M. So, for example, I may say, well, I want that 24 pixels to actually be 16 pixels because that's sort of the default of the browser. Now, that totally probably makes no sense. So that's why I created this slide. So at the very, very top is what you would normally see or what we're trying to achieve or what the designer would give you in the comp, which is, hey, I have an H1 that says responsive web design, read more. Responsive web design is kind of our main header part. Read more is our actual link. So if I look at the top left, you see here that, you know, what you would normally get is an H1 with a font size of 24 pixels. Then what I got to do is I got to do my calculation. So what I do is I say, ah, my target is 24 pixels because that's what the designer says that it should be. I need to divide it by 16 pixels because that's the typical default of most browsers. And that equals 1.5. And then what you do is you go into the CSS and you change the font size to 1.5M. That's pretty simple. You can also do sort of percentages. So here, for example, if you look at the second row, we have now our anchor tag for the H1. Now, the font size shows us 24 pixels because that's probably how we would have first done it. But the thing is we actually want to make it smaller, right? So let's say that the designer says, well, read more should be 11 pixels. Well, we could take 11 pixels divided by 24 because now our context is 24 because it's a part of the H1. And then when we do that calculation, we get 0.4583333, blah, 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 blah. And then you can just apply that to the font, the font of the H1A. Now, here's the thing. Don't think that you should just automatically get this. Like, I got to admit, I get confused a lot of times. I'm like, is the target this or is it that? You know, and it's something that takes a while to get used to. The other thing is that you see the pluses, which meant that there was probably another five more numbers that I had to go. Don't feel compelled to go in and round up to 0.46 because the thing is that the browser does all that math for you. So you can just keep those numbers, use a calculator, you know, comes on every PC that I've heard of to make sure that you can get those numbers. Now, the thing you might say is, well, Thomas, you talked something about a grid. Now, those are kind of nice textual things, but what do you do about a grid? Well, it pretty much works the same way. So on the left side, what you see here is typically what you would get. So here we have a page that has a blog, and it may have a main section and another section. And again, all of these are in pixels. But we then go in and we do our calculation using that awesome target divided by context equals result. And we now have converted them over to percentages. So, for example, for the blog main, what we did is we took 566 pixels, which was our target, and then we divided by the context, which is, let's say, 900 for this. And then, again, the result here with blog main is 63%. So this is kind of cool because he sort of has found this kind of formula that works for a lot of variety of different things. So what's going to be kind of fun is that, you know, the next time you're over at your parents, and you know you have to cut up the pie or the turkey or whatever you're eating, you'll start thinking in terms of like, well, you know, I should get, you know, 32% and then someone else should get this much. Okay, that joke didn't work. So I apologize. We will move on. Flexible images and media. Now, Ethan Marcotte actually came up with kind of a really good solution, or a real simple solution. Because what happens is that typically if we put an image on a page, that image will sometimes overflow its boundaries, right, if we do nothing. So what happened was he came up with this kind of cool thing where, well, and he didn't come up with it. Someone else came up with it, and his name escapes me right now. But basically what they did is said for an image, in CSS, we can declare its max width equal to 100%. And what that will do is that will constrain the image or the video tag or whatever media you have into the space that is available to it. Now, you know, there's a lot of floats and things like that that can, you know, make changes to that. But for the most part, it will fit into its space. And what's nice is that browsers will go ahead and they will sort of, you know, squeeze things down or make them larger based on what you have. So his perspective was, you know, you find the best resolution you can and you put that on the page. And then what would happen is that, you know, it would shrink and expand and it will look pretty good. Now, and let me show you an example of that, and then we're going to talk about a problem with it. Don't spoil the surprise. Hold on. Okay. So Robot or Not is actually Ethan Marcotte's little sample site that he wrote for the book. And you can have access to it as well at responsivewebdesign.com/robot. And you can see all of this stuff work in action. And I have a link to it on my blog, so when you take a look at it. So what we're going to do is, of course, my favorite thing to do on a weekend is to pull in the web or pull in the window. And you'll notice that what it does is it, you know, starts adjusting, you know, accordingly. Now, you'll notice here that the image itself looks like it's changing, right? So it gets to a certain point, and then it looks like it's kind of smaller, and it gets bigger. But if we look, we can see that the properties are, you know, pretty much, you know, the address is the same. It's this slide-robot.jpg. Here's the dimensions of it right now, which is 550 by 169. But if you pop it, you know, out, you can see here that, again, we're using that same slide-robot.jpg. And then if we were to go look here in the F12 tools, I can go in and say, hey, I want to look for that image. I take a look. That's not the image I want. I go to the next one. And we get the slide robot. And you'll notice here down at the bottom, and I don't know if you can see that very well. I'm sorry if you can't. But it says max width equals 100%. So what he's using is this kind of, you know, large robot file that he found, and he's just kind of sizing it appropriately. So as the gentleman said up at the front, there's kind of a challenge with that, right? Because what happens when you're on a mobile device? Do you really want to send down that, you know, these big images? You know, and I used to be kind of ambivalent to it, right? Because, you know, I Microsoft, you know, we've got big pipes there. At my house, you know, I have one of the, you know, the big packages to get whatever comes through the house. But then I was at the Sky City Grand Hotel. And I couldn't believe it, because what it does is when you sign up, I'm used to, like, unlimited, but you can pay more if you want to go faster, right? Theirs is, we're going to give you, you know, you can pay, but it's only up to like 1 gig, okay? And I'm like, no problem, because I will never hit a gig, because, you know, I'm doing email, I'm working on the, you know, the slides and stuff like that. And then like 4 hours later, you know, I go to, you know, Internet Explorer, open up, all of a sudden they show up a screen. It's like, yeah, you hit your 1 gig limit. And I'm like, how did that happen? You know, so of course now I've gone and turned off every automagic thing of installing and things like that I can. But you can see where this becomes a problem, right? And this is a first world problem, right? Because there's people in the world who, you know, to have an image of that robot come down would cost them some serious, serious cake. So there is that issue. So what the heck do we do about it? And by the way, this is the most contentious issue. So if you are into, I love little wars. So like I read the W3C, internal emails because everyone kind of has an attitude and they like. I mean, it's basically drama for web geeks. And this is kind of the big thing. This is the thing that like Ethan, when he goes out and speaks, there's always the person in the back who's like, I have a problem with this whole responsive web design thing, and it's fatally flawed. And Ethan will be like, yeah, I do know, but there's ways to get around it. So one of the possibilities that we have, and I'm going to show you a second possibility a little later on when we get to media queries, but there's one possibility of something that the Filament Group came up with. And what they did was they said that basically what they're going to do is they're going to get the resolution. They're going to send the resolution up, and then you can define what image gets sent down. So is it a small image or a big image? So here, for example, if I go to their little demo page, you see here that we get pretty much the big picture here. But again, if I was to go ahead and grab my window, which I am prone to do, it actually pulls the smaller image for me. So there are ways to get around this. Now, again, with the web design, there is always a trade-off. And the trade-off is that you do have to have JavaScript, and you have to. If you're one of those people that hates JavaScript, which I can't believe why, you wouldn't be able to use something like this. And then I'll show you another way of getting around that here in a little bit. All right. So that was the boring part. This is the most awesome part. This is the thing that I get excited about, because when I became an IE evangelist at Microsoft and an HTML5 evangelist, I was looking through all the things and I was trying to figure out like what's kind of the coolest thing that we're doing. What's the thing I want to talk about to people? And HTML5 video, that was okay. Audio was something else. But what really got me excited was this thing of media queries. And so if you think about sort of where we were in CSS 2.1, we could define these media types like screen and print. And, we thought like, oh, that was kind of cool. But here was the problem. No one was really using it, other than if someone wanted to do like a print style sheet. There was a time where they were talking about this handheld media type. But think about that right now. How would you handle that today in a world where you have feature phones, you have smartphones, and you have all these kind of in between devices? So it wasn't very easy. And also, it was a lot of grunt work. And I don't know about you, but I'm not a big fan of grunt work. So it wasn't something that really took off. The other thing is, at the time, people weren't thinking much about mobile devices, right? I mean, if you think about it, we weren't all mobile obsessed until about 5 years ago, or when a certain phone came out. That changed everything. Now, what CSS3 Media Queries does is it's actually a module that the W3C is coming up with and trying to standardize it. It is a candidate recommendation, I believe, right now. But what it does is it specifies methods to enable web devs to scope a style sheet to a set of precise device capabilities. So now instead of saying, hey, what are you? Are you an Internet Explorer browser? Are you a mobile Safari browser? Instead, what it says is, I don't know what you are. I'm just going to look at the capabilities you have, and then I will render the experience so. So the first example here is a real simple example. This is what it looks like when you establish a media query. The first thing you do is that you define what the media that you're going to use as a part of your query, which this one is screen, and typically the one you'll use is screen. But then you also have the query itself. So here, for example, we have max width is 600 pixels. So what we're saying is if the maximum width of this device is 600 pixels, then go ahead and do something. And in this instance, we're telling any body text is going to be a font size of 80% to make it smaller. Now, what's nice is we can do a variety of kind of queries. So we can combine queries. So I can say, hey, is the device between the width of the device between 320 pixels and 480 pixels? Then I want to go ahead and do something. I can also use not semantics. So I can say, well, if it's not print and the maximum width is 600 pixels, go ahead and style whatever so. And then we can get really interesting where we can say, well, the media screen type is screen X and Y, and then print and A, print A and B. So there's a lot of different things that you can kind of munch together. But what you'll find is that you're probably going to spend a lot of time with max width and min width. We can also declare them in a variety of ways. So there's kind of three ways. One is in the style sheet that you're using. You can also do an import rule, and you can also do a link element. What you'll see is most people, you know, tend to do it in the style sheet, and that's what I agree with. I think that if you can do it there, you're better off because you're going to be much closer to the styling that you're going to be doing anyway. But like I said, it does support the other two if you find a need for that. Now, here are the supported media properties, and like I said before, you're going to spend most of your time with the width and the height, but you'll also have things, for example, orientation. So when you move, you know, your iPad, let's say, from horizontal to vertical, that's a different type of orientation, and you can have a media query that says, oh, I noticed that you changed orientation. Let me go ahead and style things different. You can also look at things like monochrome. So if you're doing like screen reader type things, you can say, oh, I'm going to do this. Or we can even look at resolution. So if we say, oh, this is a high resolution, well, then I want to give it to high res photos. And of course, you know, the opposite as well. So let's take a look at an example of how one works. So this sample is actually taken out of a book, and I'm going to talk to you about this book because it's probably one of the best books on CSS3 that I've ever read. But what they did was they actually created this simple website called Little Pea Bakery. And, you know, it's kind of just a simple site. You know, it's got its navigation on the left side. You know, it has this, single opening. But then when you get down, you have these large images, and you have these multi-columns and things like that. On the right side, you can see we have emailed newsletters, Mother's Day special. So it's you're pretty much your typical three-column layout. But as we do with everything, we always grab the end of the window to see how awesome this site truly is. So when I grab it and I pull it in, you'll notice a few things start to happen. One is when I get to a certain point, a media query is fired off, and you'll notice that we have now moved the navigation from the left side up to the right side. Now, as I keep pulling these in further, you'll notice that we will continue to change items. So notice that nav, as I pull it in, is about to hit up against our logo, and we know that that's not good. So what does it do? It actually goes ahead and floats it under there. And also, if we scroll down, notice that our text is actually getting a little bit smaller. We're losing a little bit of width. So what we do is we then go from a vertical view to a horizontal view for our candies, truffles, and pastries. And then as I continue to do this, you'll notice that those images, and let me bring this up so you can see the images, you'll notice that all of a sudden the images are now much smaller as well. And so if we pull it all the way, which this would be more like a mobile site, you'll notice that what they've done is they've kind of like aggregated the navigation, right? Because if you're on a mobile device, you don't want to be scrolling through, you know, navigation. You want to be able to get to navigation fairly quickly and just get to the things that you want and need. So this is kind of a cool app, and let me just kind of show you some things about this app. So one is we'll go ahead and we'll take a look here at the script. And now she does something that I typically don't recommend, which is putting your CSS style within the HTML page itself. But she did this as just to make the example super simple. But if I scroll down, I'm going to push this up a bit so people can see. You'll notice that she starts off putting together her media queries. So let me scroll up here. And what she did was she actually put the media queries at the bottom, which, of course, because of cascading style sheets, cascading rules, you're going to want to put those down at the bottom. So what she does is she starts off with, well, do I have a really big screen here? So this is where the minimum width is 1200 pixels. If so, you can see that she kind of, you know, used a lot of styling to sort of blast out the widths that you see here. And then she changes again the navigation and things like that. And then, of course, she starts going down to 760 pixels, which if people are familiar with the iPad, you probably know why she did that. And then also you'll notice here that she went in and she changes the images that are used as the resolution has changed. And again, she's not asking, hey, are you Internet Explorer or are you, you know, Mobile Safari? She's saying, hey, what is it that you can serve up? And then I'll give you this particular style. And then here you can see, for example, she has one here that's specific to device pixel ratio. So she actually figures out that, oh, this is a high-res iPhone, for example. So I'm going to go ahead and give a 128-bit image here. Now, what's kind of cool is if you use Internet Explorer, you can do use some of the tools. And I guess I am sort of a shill because it is our browser. But I do like the tools. And what I find is my team, we're able to solve about, I would say, 80 to 90% of all problems just using the F12 tools here. So a lot of people don't know about the tools or they've seen them, but they're just kind of like, oh, all I want to do is view source. But there's some really neat tools. So, for example, I showed you the ruler earlier, where you can set up a set of rulers here. So I can say, okay, let's go ahead and put a ruler here. So I can say show ruler, and I can say, okay, I'm going to drag this out to, 760. And then what you can do is when you're doing sort of your, little drag here, you can go, okay, when it hits that point, I should see something change. So you can actually test out, hey, is this query working or not? Also, one of the things you can do is you can see what's coming across the wire. So when I first saw this, and I saw that she had different images resolutions coming down based on the media query, I was kind of puzzled because I was like, well, how is she going to be able to do that? And is she really doing that? Well, it turns out I can go in. Let's go ahead and clear the cache here. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to go over to the network and start capturing. And this network tab just shows me what's coming across the wire. So what I will do is I'll start pulling in. And I didn't do it right. So let's stop again. Okay, we'll try again. It actually worked. Okay, so what you see here basically is, and that's pretty small, so let me try to magnify that a bit for you. So here, for example, what I can see is that when that media query fired off, it really did go out and grab the images that we requested for that resolution. Now the thing is that typically people aren't going to be grabbing their window back and forth, so it would have only downloaded those images that it needed. But this is kind of just a unique way of going in and grabbing those. Now I haven't tested on all the different mobile browsers to see if this works or not, but fairly much across the board, you shouldn't have a problem with it. Magnifier, go away. All right. Now, this media query stuff I think is pretty cool. That you can say, hey, based on a certain set of features or capabilities, I can render or style something correctly. Now, there's a little bit of a fly in the ointment when it comes to mobile devices, because here's the problem. So you may say, well, my mobile device, it's 320 by whatever. Well, the problem is that the device, even though that's its resolution, it won't tell the browser that it's that resolution. And you're like, what? My mobile, you know, browser is lying to me? I can't believe it. It's true. And the reason why they do this is because if you notice what typically mobile browsers do is they want to actually take what you've done and they actually just want to resize it to the viewport. So what it does is it sort of tricks the browser into thinking it's something that it's truly not so that it will do that rendering correctly, that looks right. Now, what you'll find that this usually happens when you've built something using media queries and things like that, and it doesn't seem to work. Like you go to your website and you go, hey, nothing's working here. Why is that? And that's usually because, again, the mobile browser is trying to fool you. So what happened was, then this actually happened with Apple quite a bit when they first came out with the iPhone. So what they did was they came out with this viewport meta tag. And what the viewport meta tag basically does is says, yes, this website is something that is adaptable for a phone. So if you see things that are for my mobile device, go ahead and use those. And so you use this simple tag, meta name equals viewport. And then to get it to really tell you what the true width is, you can say content equals width equals device width. And that's kind of the nice little trick. So, again, if you're ever finding that your media queries don't work when you play around with it for the first time and it looks okay in a browser but doesn't look okay on your mobile device, this is 99.9% of what the problem probably is. Also, on mobile devices, when they think of the device width, so a lot of times when we think of device width, you know, we think of, oh, it's actually just the rendering width, which is what width typically is. And device width is actually the device width itself. And so if you notice, on most mobile devices, there is no chrome on the side. It just goes straight to the edges. And so sometimes it'll get confusing when you're doing width and device width. So be careful on that. And then finally, maximum zoom. So what happens, for example, is when you take a phone and you actually put it into an orientation mode, what it tends to do is it tends to go and magnify, regardless of what you had intended your styling to be. So a lot of times what will happen is, you know, when you're kind of playing around with this stuff, you'll find that, you know, if you don't set the maximum zoom to like 1.0, actually, it starts giving you weird stuff when you're going into orientation mode. And the good news is that for those of you who have Windows phones, the new version has the IE9 built into it now. So all these things that I've been talking about are actually a part of it as well. So with CSS media queries, what's kind of cool is that there's a lot of support for it. So I'm not telling you something that you go, I can't use it. Now, there may be one or two of you who are like, well, Thomas, I really can't use it because all of my users are using IE6. And if you are that person, come up and talk to me afterwards because I really want to understand why. But if you are in that case, then what you can do is you can actually download a polyfill called CSS3 Media Queries JS by a gentleman named Wouter van der Graaf. And it's actually a really, really simple thing. You can just include the script in your page. It's just one line of code. And what it does is it parses the CSS and applies the style for positive media tests that it finds. This is a really good one. It's the one that most everybody uses. But I'll give you one caveat. For all the auto magic stuff that it does, the problem is that it's a relatively large file, and there's some processing there. So there's a little bit of a hit that you take. Now, if you say, well, Thomas, really, I'm only interested in, you know, max width and height. I really don't care about all the other things. Then there's another good one called response.js that you could use instead. And actually, Ethan, in his book, uses response.js because he said, you know, he finds that he doesn't use a lot of the other ones. So what I would say is that, you know, if you're looking to keep your stuff real tight, go with response.js. If you're looking for something that's going to automatically make your life easier, then go with CSS3 Media Queries JS. So some other things to think about, and this is more sort of on the design side. So when you're doing your media queries, you know, when you're styling elements on the page, you know, one of the things you can do is you can actually adjust elements to make them more touch-friendly. So you can say, like, oh, I know if I'm going to be at a smaller screen, I need to make things have much bigger target for touching. Also, adjusting text for readability. I can't tell you how many times I've seen like people who have built mobile apps, and when you look at them, you're like, I just can't read this. I won't name the names, but there's a U.S. News organization, and I just, anytime I go to their site, I just don't read it because it's super, super tiny. And there's things you can go and do that's going to make your typography, you know, even more awesome. And you can decide like, oh, okay, instead of a serif font, I'm going to use a sans serif font and all those kinds of things. You can actually insert jump links to eliminate lengthy scrolling so that if someone scrolls to the bottom, they don't have to go, oh, I need to go back to the navigation and scroll, 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 scroll. You can just put in jump links as well. You can also do image swapping like we talked about, as well as customizing print styling, which is pretty cool. Now, what you might say to yourself is, well, you know, isn't there something that I can already use? You know, do I really have to write all of these media queries? And the answer is you don't have to write them all because Andy Clark did it for you. So Andy Clark, he's written a book called Hard Boiled. I don't know if anyone's read it. It's a pretty good book. But what he did one day was he said, well, you know what? I know a lot of people are interested in media queries. I am too. So I'm actually going to go ahead and build a CSS style sheet that has the media queries for most of what people want. And so let me just kind of bring that up here. We're going to open Visual Web Developer Express so everyone can see it a little better. So he's got a lot of good stuff. It's Creative Commons, so you have more than every right to use it. And so what he did was he started looking at, you know, smartphones. So he started off with, okay, I'm going to have, you know, my media where if it's a screen and the device width is between 320 pixels and 480 pixels, then I'm going to go ahead and do this. And then you can see that he starts, you know, thinking about things like iPads, for example. So he says, well, if it's, you know, this, now what's nice is he's not asking for if it's an iPad, right? Because we got bit by this on the in the browser wars, right, where we had browsers that would say, well, to work right, I'm just going to tell them I'm a different browser so that it would work. And then we're still battling those, right? Like every time a new version of a browser comes out, we go to a website and they go, sorry, you must use the old version of our thing, you know, because they put that in there. So what's kind of nice is he's looking at capabilities, not necessarily the device itself. So he has things for iPods, desktops and laptops, large screen. So if you're looking at something on a TV or something of that size, you can do that. And then, of course, he added one for iPhone 4 with this high pixel ratio. So again, feel free to go and grab this. It'll make your life much easier as you're building these things out. So I don't make any money. I don't have a referral Amazon code for this book. But I'll tell you what, the book is amazing. So what I like about this book, and, you know, Zoe, like I said, doesn't give me $20 every time I mention her book. But what she did was she wrote a book about CSS3. So media queries and everything's included in there. All the things about mobile that I was talking about, she goes into much greater detail. Also, I don't know about you all, but I hate books that are basically regurgitation of help files, right? They all look the same. They all have the same chapter, layout, content. And in this, what she does is she actually builds, like, real-world stuff. So you saw, like, the bakery. And she not only talks about the bakery and the mechanics, but she also talks about, hey, why did I, you know, align the navigation in a certain way? When does multi-column make sense versus not making sense? So I would say if there is a book that you want to get if you're into CSS3, this is the book to get. I love this book so much. There's also a good article that was written by Smashing Magazine on responsive web design techniques, tools, and design strategies. Everything is here. So if you want a polyfill for image replacement, it's there. If you want to see, like, hey, let me look at some other good websites that have done this type of stuff, it's there as well. So it's a very good article. It's a long, long article. They gathered a whole lot of stuff, but it's worth taking the time to go through it. And again, you don't need to write down the smashingmagazine.com. You can go to my blog post, and it has a link to it. There's also this site called Media Queries. And again, if you're crazy about media queries like I am, you're going to absolutely love this site. So what you do is you go, and it's just that. It is all these websites that use media queries. And so, and I'll tell you what, it's funny because you would think that I've gone to these enough that I would be sort of over it, but I still, every time in my reader when a new one shows up, the first thing I do is I go to it and I start grabbing that window and seeing what it does. And I'm serious. You thought Facebook was addictive? This media query site is just insanely addictive. So make sure that you use it with good judgment. Now, if you're having trouble sleeping at night and you just can't get to sleep, there is the spec that you can go and read for media queries. I got to admit, as much as I love media queries, I've tried to read this and I just can't get through it. I'm sure that there's someone at the OEC working very hard on this, and I really appreciate all the work they do, but there is this spec that you can go look at. There's also something kind of cool that they've done is called Media Query Listeners. I didn't put it in this presentation. I'm going to talk about it tomorrow in my morning session. But Media Query Listeners allows you to say if there was a change in the media, for example. So if you went from color to monochrome or the device width has changed for some reason, you can have events that fire off of that. So it's called Media Query Listeners. And if you're interested, I have a session tomorrow morning, first thing, that I'll be talking about that. So some of you are going, hey, Thomas, I thought we talked about there was this fourth magical element, you know, of responsive web design. And there is, and it's basically design. So what happens is that right now we're sort of at the beginning of responsive web design. So responsive web design isn't sort of like progressive enhancement where everyone sort of has gathered like, yes, progressive enhancement is a good thing. But what's happening is that there's a lot of people who are starting to think about, you know, well, how do we design things? So, for example, one of the questions that a lot of people are doing now is they're saying, well, do we start with a mobile-first design concept? So there's this group of people who believe that what we should do is instead of designing for the desktop browser and then going and doing a different thing for mobile browsers, maybe we shouldn't do that. Maybe it should be the other way around. We should think mobile-first and then scale it to the browser. Because what we shouldn't do is we shouldn't kind of go into this concept of that mobile is the traditional person walking with their mobile device, looking and, oh, don't put too much on the screen because that's not what they want. The problem is that people want what they want when they have the device. Also, mobility doesn't mean that, when I go home, I now am going to go to my desktop, because I bet a lot of you, when you're at home and you're sitting in bed or you're brushing your teeth, watching TV, you're probably looking at stuff on your mobile device or on a tablet, form factor. You're probably not always going to be sitting at a device. So you may still have those same needs on the desktop browser as you do, as you would want in mobile. And so we need to think about that. The other thing is this really poses a design challenge for what are the assets we create. So a lot of people, what they do is they go through that concept of, hey, we figure out what the client wants, what is it that we're going to do, then we create these, wireframes, and then after the wireframes, we do these visual comps. So in responsive web design, how many comps do I do? Do I assume that I'm going to do 10 comps? I think if anyone around here is doing agency work, you know that probably more than likely if you go to them and go, yes, we're going to spend 5 months on doing visual comps for every single device that we're thinking of, they'll tell you to take a flying leap. So we've got to think about those things that maybe we're going to change. Maybe no longer are we going to do visual comps. Maybe we're going to go directly from wireframes to actual code in the browser. Something to think about. So there's this design element is something that we're all still trying to figure out. I don't think that everyone has solved it, but the good part is that everyone sort of sees that responsive web design is inevitability, right? That we all are going to be wanting responsive web designs, and that our users, they may not know that they want this, but they're going to begin to say, I like this over here. This is how a site should work, and hopefully they're pointing to a responsive web site. Now, Ethan Marcotte has a book out on responsive web design. It's by the folks from A Book Apart. I love this series because what they do is they boil things down to its essence. Because we're all getting busy, right? Like it's hard when I go to the bookstore and go to the digital online store, and there's a book with 1,000 pages. I'm like, I just don't have time to read it. This book, I think, is 150 pages, maybe. And so what's nice about it is it's very quick, easy to read. He talks through all of the things that we've been talking about here. He gives you good examples, shows you all the code and things like that. So I would highly recommend it. You can either buy the book or you can just buy the PDF file as well, or an EPUB version too. And so with that, I'm going to just ask you to do some simple things. One is that, if you have an opportunity, try to use responsive web design. The good part about responsive web design is that it doesn't have to be a net new thing, right? A lot of times whenever we talk about a new technology or something, it's always, well, start on, a new app and then you can go do it. What's nice about this is you can start doing it in pieces. And what we found out, what we've seen, is that people who were thinking about responsiveness even before these things were available to us, it was a lot easier for them to build those. So what I've seen is that some people are just doing one media query and saying, like, hey, if they have this kind of device with these kind of capabilities, we're going to just style this a little bit different. So start on that and do just that kind of one simple thing, and then we can move, kind of the web forward. And again, the second thing is go to my site at asimplepixel.tumblr.com. I have the deck already up there in PDF format, and I also have all the links that you saw. So you can go through and just click them to your heart's content. And then the other thing is I really, really appreciate that with the party about to happen in mere minutes that you all stuck around. So thank you very much. So if you do have any questions...